Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Mike Haggerty in for Vicki Gonzalez. To address California's affordable housing crisis, Governor Gavin Newsom directed two agencies to find state-owned properties and aggressively find ways to transform them into affordable housing. According to his office, the order has so far resulted in at least 16 plans involving the state, housing developers, and communities to develop more than 5,000 new rental properties throughout the state. The most recently announced plan is to transform three state office buildings in downtown Sacramento into what is promised to be hundreds of new affordable housing units. Those three buildings are located on or near Capitol Mall, the current headquarters of the California Employment Development Department, the EDD, EDD's solar building, just a few blocks away, and the State Personnel Board building at the corner of 8th and Capitol Mall. The Department of General Services hopes this project will breathe new life into state office buildings in downtown Sacramento. In a few minutes, we'll be speaking with Sacramento City Council member Katie Valenzuela, whose district includes those buildings. But first, we'll hear from the two state agencies that have been tasked with this project. Jason Kenney is Deputy Director of the Department of General Services and is joined by Sasha Kurgan, Deputy Secretary of Housing at the Department of Housing and Community Development. Thank you both for being with us this morning.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, absolutely.
So can you tell our listeners more about your agencies and what their respective roles will be in this specific project? Jason?
Yeah, the Department of General Services is the business manager for the state of California. So our job is to ultimately undertake those sort of transactional efforts that departments can't do on their own. In the context of this housing program, back in 2019, Governor Newsom, by executive order, directed my department and the Department of Housing and Community Development to undertake an ambitious a new program to develop housing, affordable housing, on excess state property. And so we've been co-leading that effort since then, and these projects are a part of that.
And how do both of your agencies plan to work together to accomplish the transformation?
Well, luckily our teams have been working together since the governor signed the executive order in 2019. So we're already in a really good rhythm of bringing our skills and expertise and really playing to our strengths. So like Jason said, you know, I think of them like our state's real estate agent, and we're lucky to have a really high capacity real estate agent in this regard. At the Department of Housing and Community Development, we bring all of our housing policy expertise, our knowledge of housing finance, and knowledge of how to get affordable housing built in our state. We also weave in other policy goals, like how housing connects to our climate strategies. So our teams work together on a regular basis, not only through these public solicitations, but all the stuff behind the scenes to make government work together better.
Sacramento Mayor Daryl Steinberg said this project has the potential to create about 1,000 new housing units, but Assemblymember Kevin McCarty said about 20% of that housing would be affordable. Can either of you clarify the expected number of new housing units that will be created with this project, and how many of them will be affordable?
Yeah, I'll jump in. It would depend on whether or not the buildings are adaptively reused, or whether or not a more new construction centric approach is taken. If it is new construction, then there's a greater potential, obviously, for units. If they are adaptively reused, somewhere in the ballpark between 350 and 500 units is probably what to expect. When we initially studied the buildings for affordable housing, we looked at them from a 100% affordable perspective. I think what the Assemblymember is referencing is our leasing authority and statute allows for certain things and sets a minimum number of affordable units. But so far, the majority of projects in our program tend to be much closer to the 100% affordable than not.
And this is where it's really exciting to see what kind of responses we get, not only from the development community, but also from community members and the local team as well. Like Jason said, we have a minimum amount of affordability. And I just want to put that in context. You know, affordable housing in this regard, it's 80% of area median income. These are working families. These are seniors who are on fixed incomes. These are, you know, 80% of area median income for a two-person household, that's $64,000 a year. And so we are not, it's not only the lowest income, it's really a range. And this could be a mixed income project, and that's what the statute allows us to do.
Sasha, the term climate-friendly housing has been used a lot with these types of projects. Can you explain what that is and how it relates to this specific project?
Yeah, I think this is a great example of what climate-friendly housing can be. I mean, think of it not only within the unit for climate-friendly, that could be energy-efficient homes, healthier materials that improve indoor air quality. But this project is really notable for the climate impacts, both of the location and, as Jason mentioned, the adaptive reuse potential. So I'll take those in two turns. On the adaptive reuse, think about that as like recycling a building, using the existing bones of the building to go from a non-residential use, in this case, a state office building, into residential. There's embodied carbon in that building and a lot of savings from an energy perspective, so we're exploring that potential. But the location of the building also has great climate impact as well because it's transit adjacent. Three light rail lines within steps of folks' doorsteps, plus dozens of bus lines, which allow for options for people. And it doesn't mean that you need to live car-free, but it means that you could be or use your car less. And that is the biggest thing that any one of us can do to improve our climate impact is to drive less.
Jason, two of the buildings in this proposal are Employment Development Department buildings. One's the current headquarters, the other the EDD Solar building. How will workers at those offices be impacted by this project, or are most of them working remotely now?
They won't be impacted. We have a building program in Sacramento that's long targeted some of our most efficient infrastructure for renovation. And those employees are slated to move to a building that's under renovation right now. And so the goal would be to, when they're out, that would be when the developer who was awarded, whoever that is, would begin breaking ground at the EDD building. So we're timing it so that there's very little overlap, but after all of the agencies move out of the buildings.
And Jason, from outside, these offices don't fit the traditional look, I think, for a lot of people of what affordable housing is in their mind. What makes these three buildings ideal for the transformation? And can you kind of paint a word picture of what they could look like once the transition's complete?
Yeah. And again, I think it has to be kind of broken up between, you know, adaptive reuse and new construction. If something were to be new constructed, that would necessarily involve, you know, demolition of the buildings and something new erected out of the ground, which could look like anything. In an adaptive reuse scenario, the what that looks like, to Sasha's point, is to basically take the building down to whatever is safe and minimally necessary for demolition, and then building it back out for housing. And so you would do things like keep the facade. You may construct some exterior balconies. One cool thing is like the solar building, for example. It's named that because of a south-facing solar array. And that actually creates a really great opportunity for outside balconies where those solar PVs currently sit. It's kind of has a stepped look to it. And so there are some intrinsic benefits to the buildings that lend themselves to adaptive reuse. One of the things that you do look for is building footplate depth, because, you know, there's only so long that a housing unit can be regardless of the number of unit bedrooms. And so you want to see a double loaded corridor, ideally. And these have that capacity, as well as additional spaces that could be used for community serving amenities, whether that's a, you know, grocery store, a restaurant, or whatever else that would support the development and ultimately the area and other housing projects in the area.
So Jason's talked about opportunities. Sasha, let's talk about challenges. What do you see as the biggest challenges in making these transformations, and how do your agencies hope to overcome them?
Yeah, I think, you know, we get questions about challenges a lot. And so I would hearken back to the fact that this comes from the governor's vision, and we've had some years working on this. And as you mentioned, 5,000 units in our pipeline around the state. We've worked through some of the challenges and hope to bring all that experience to bear here. I'll acknowledge we have a competitive funding environment when it comes to affordable housing. And so this is the way that we work through that challenge is by bringing a bunch of great minds together, not only from the state and from the development team, but also from our local partners, to think about all the tools and resources we have to bring to bear to be able to make something different. So I understand folks want to hear about challenges, but I think that we have the right team assembled to be able to navigate them.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. If you're just joining us, we're talking with two state agencies about their plan to convert three state office buildings in downtown Sacramento into affordable housing. And now we're going to bring in Sacramento Council Member Katie Valenzuela, whose district includes the three buildings that we've been discussing. Council Member Valenzuela, thanks for being with us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
So you've expressed your excitement over this project in a press conference last week. Why do you support the plan?
Well, I'm thrilled. I don't know if excited really captures the energy here. We're thrilled. Shortly after I came into office, it was December 2020. I think maybe that next month I was on a call with Jason at DGS and the downtown business groups. And the question was, well, what's the plan? These buildings are empty. Are the state workers coming back? Can we lease them to private businesses? And when we mentioned housing, or I think I might have mentioned housing or Jason mentioned it, I don't remember which one of us mentioned it first. There was a gleam in Jason's eye that made me think, oh, he's got something in the pipeline here for these projects. So we had a follow-up call where he unveiled their plans, first for just the two EDD buildings. This third building was a new surprise for all of us in a great way. And I was just thrilled. And I've been persistently checking in with Jason, might be the right word to say, well, when is it? Well, where is it? Well, is there state money available? How can we do this? So we're just really thrilled to see what proposals come forward. This could be, I mean, folks remember that before there were the state buildings, before it was Capitol Mall, that there was housing here. You know, our history in Sacramento harkens back to the West End, which was this incredibly diverse place where you heard jazz music and great restaurants. And I just imagine us bringing that back to the Capitol Corridor, what that means for our businesses down there. And I'm thrilled.
What conversations have you had with residents, business owners, and your other constituents about the plan? Have they expressed any concerns?
For the most part, it's been great excitement across the board, especially knowing that there might be some affordable units. As Sasha mentioned, we are in the central city in particular. It's really hard to find units that an 80% AMI family could afford. So this is really fantastic news. There are folks who are worried that, you know, it might be too much affordable housing in one place or how we would make it work from an infrastructure perspective. But I will say that those are definitely minority voices. The overall sentiment is just really excited about what this means for the future of downtown and how this could re-energize that whole corridor.
During last week's press conference, you admitted that downtown and midtown had very different pandemic experiences. Mm-hmm. Many people still patronizing a number of the midtown businesses, but a lot of people didn't visit or patronize downtown Sacramento as much. How do you think this project will convince people to both live and patronize downtown business?
Well, I think a big part of what made Midtown relatively successful, and I don't want to downplay the struggles those businesses still had, but we were living there, right? I live in Midtown. And so when it was safe to do so, we started picking up food and picking up coffee. And those businesses have been able to largely surpass where they were pre-COVID already. Versus the downtown corridor, it was just nobody was living there, right? You know, you'd go down there, it felt like a ghost town. You know, businesses were shuttered and there was just no energy. So I know the Downtown Partnership has done a lot to do events to bring people downtown, but having a 24/7 downtown where people are living and working and walking their dogs and taking their kids to school and riding the transit will just, I hope, make it a lot more inviting for visitors who come downtown. It'll feel a little more like a neighborhood and feel a little more like a community you want to spend some time in.
Much of the state workforce is still working mostly remotely, and state workers were a major pillar of the downtown economy prior to the pandemic. Are you concerned that many, if not most, of those workers aren't coming back?
Well, I think this is really an evolution of that vision of downtown, right? I think what DGS and the state are doing to consolidate the workforce in certain buildings and open up other buildings for new use is the future. I think it was probably never super healthy for a downtown to be so dependent on state workers. My first job out of grad school, I was working at a nonprofit downtown, and our holiday schedule wasn't the same as the state. And you knew when the state workers weren't there because you could not get a sandwich to save your life. It was just everything was shut because that was the only economic driver. This really gives us an opportunity to diversify that clientele, to have people who are patronizing restaurants and coffee shops 7 days a week rather just when they're at work. And I think will really lead to a more sustainable business climate in the central city.
And I think you've really kind of nailed how you feel about this shaping the future of the area. What does it mean in terms of making more affordable housing available in Sacramento?
Oh, well, gosh, the central city is the epicenter of this crisis. We have units leasing for well over $3,000 a month, which is not something that most people in the central city can afford. We also have about 1,400 voucher holders that are holding housing choice vouchers, which covers up to 80% AMI that can't find housing, that are in our shelters or on our streets who are desperately looking for that place to live. live. So having those units available is an incredible strategy to stabilizing our workforce, stabilizing our seniors, folks with disabilities, families, so that they can really be those productive workers, those productive coffee buyers, those people out in the community, and really live the stable lives that makes our whole system work a little bit better.
Jason Kenney is Deputy Director of the Department of General Services, Sasha Kurgan, Deputy Secretary of Housing of the Department of Housing and Community Development, and Katie Valenzuela, a Sacramento City Council member. Thank you all so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, a new book out today is asking us how to rethink how we view good and healthy bodies and taking a closer look at diet culture, which has long embraced thinness. The author of It's Always Been Ours, Rewriting the Story of Black Women's Bodies, joins us to share how this diet culture has disproportionately harmed women of color. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio. I'm Mike Haggerty for Vicki Gonzalez.
One banana split and all the cats join in.